Morning, birds. Let's hear you. There you go. Birds, I had a wild day yesterday. We're going to hear some about it, some of it on the air today. I voted. I did. I know. I mailed in that ballot. I know. No, I didn't. I tried to go to the that little box that was somewhere in our ward here. I couldn't locate that. And then I went to past a post office. So you know what I finally did? I mailed my ballot in the box at the hospital. Eddie Van Halen died yesterday. I think you knew that. Did you hear? He did. 65. He had cancer. We'll spotlight some of his stuff today. We don't pass up an opportunity to play innovative stuff. Van Halen, flashy guitar player, actually modified some instruments and stuff like that. And I think he patented a special device. Anyway, Eddie Van Halen. Hello, it's 4 after the hour. It is the Pandemic Pirate Radio Show from Chicago at bleat.network. I did, in fact, vote by mail yesterday from the hospital. I'm going to chat with Dr. Paul in a second. I guess we're all sort of hospitalized. Well, not all of us. Some of us are. Set the headlines real quicker. Trump's return leaves White House in disarray as cases jolt the West Wing. Get this. I'm trying to imagine wherever you are today, and oh, God knows, you know, we all want to be somewhere else, but imagine being in the White House. The staff in the residence where they all live wore full protective gear, and the West Wing was mostly empty, cleared of aides who were sick or working from home. It's nice to know the government is working from home. So that's going on. We'll talk a little bit more about that, to say the very least. Tonight, the debate. I won't probably get a chance to see this. I'm going to, as I said, I voted. I know who I voted for. I'll tell you later. But I know who I want to win. So tonight is the debate. I would say of all the debates, the one that I would be most interested in checking out is tonight. This is a Kamala Harris and Mike Pence. So 8 p.m. Central time tonight, and we'll kick it around tomorrow, perhaps. I hope something emerges that is worth noting, something new or something. I want to hear a Kamala talk. I do. I want to hear Kamala talk. The thing that might be interesting in the background there is that Biden has been pulling away, Biden and Harris, in the polls. Monmouth poll in Pennsylvania. It looks very good. Michigan and Wisconsin, along with Pennsylvania. The analysis is, if this is all going the way that it seems to be, that would give Biden and Harris a clear advantage in states that are worth more than the 270 electoral votes needed to win. So we're going to monitor that. But I'd say it's a pretty good night to have a debate if you're in the front there. The economy is in bad shape. And if you haven't heard about that, yesterday, the president of the United States, of course, made it worse. Here's the deal. Job growth is stalling. Layoffs are mounting. American households and businesses have gone 2 months without the enhanced unemployment benefits and the low interest loans and the other stuff that was supposed to prop up the economy. Now, on the heels of President Trump's announcement Tuesday that he was cutting off stimulus negotiations until after the election, you should live so long. We'll see. The wait will go on at least another month and very likely until the next term starts in 2021. You know, he could reverse that. Trump is the master at manipulating. Well, he thinks he is the master at manipulating the stock market. They didn't like it. The market didn't like that idea that we were just going to stop negotiating. We'll see. We're going to have to do something here. Furloughs are turning into permanent job losses. Major companies like Disney and Allstate are embarking on a new round of layoffs. It's just not good. So we're going to have to see what happens here. The risk to waiting is that we may find ourselves in a place where we're unable to turn back. We will hit a tipping point. That's according to Karen Dinan. She's a Harvard economist. Was part of the Obama administration. And Jerome Powell, who is the chairman of the Fed, echoed the same idea in a speech on Tuesday, said that failing to act quickly carried risks for the economy, like permanent risks. Quoting, too little support would lead to a weak recovery, creating unnecessary hardship for households and businesses. Over time, household insolvencies and business bankruptcies would rise, harming the productive capacity of the economy and stopping growth. So, not a little thing. And it's going to be hard to get to the hour today without editorializing. But if there's anything that Trump could do right, it hasn't happened this week. It's 9 after the hour. I'm going to spotlight something. I want to make sure that everybody knows that this story, for some reason, it was kind of buried in some of these news sources that I look at. Anyway, Reuters has it this morning. Private contractors hired by Moderna. Moderna is the pharmaceutical maker that the government has a contract with, our government. Private contractors who were hired by Moderna to recruit volunteers for its coronavirus vaccine trial failed to enroll enough Black, Latino, and Native American participants to determine how well the vaccine works in these populations. That is according to company executives and vaccine researchers. What's going on here? As you know, Black people are much more likely to be affected by this, along with Latinos and Native Americans, non-whites. So the idea that you have a vaccine that's going to work, it has to be, you have to see, you know, who's going to get it. That's the first thing that apparently happened. You have to have enough people of various No, race, creed, color, religion, not religion, you know what I mean. So anyway, Moderna slowed enrollment of its late-stage trial and instructed research centers to focus on increasing particular, I should say, participation among minority volunteers. It sounds to me like they just couldn't pull the switch on it. Five investigators working on the Moderna trial said in interviews that commercial site investigators quickly filled a large portion of the 30,000-person study with mostly white volunteers. As I just said, though, COVID-19 infects blacks in the United States nearly three times the rate of whites, and they are twice as likely to die from it. That is according to the National Urban League. I'll go on here a little bit. Dr. Paul Evans, chief executive of the Velocity Clinical Research in Durham, North Carolina. His company was hired to test the Moderna vaccine. Set efforts to enroll volunteers from diverse backgrounds to provide proper population balance is, quote, notoriously difficult. Is it now? We'll have to see about that. Black Americans make up only about 7% of the trial. It should be closer to 13% to reflect the actual U.S. population. And then again, if you factor in the increased risk that they have, you've got a different thing here. One-fourth of Moderna's 100 trial sites are run by academic centers that are part of the National Institute of Health's COVID-19 Prevention Trials Network. The rest are largely commercial subcontractors. See, that's an interesting thing that we're into. Some stuff you delegate, some you can't. So to close it, Moderna is one of the furthest along in the United States race for a vaccine. It's received, now you've paid for it, it's received more than $1 billion in government funding to develop and produce its candidate, and another $1.5 billion to supply to the American public. So, what's up, Moderna? It's 12 after the hour. I'm going to go deep in a moment. Deepfoot returns. Talk to Dr. Paul, and we will talk to you. And later this hour, we're going to talk about Enneagrams. So, I know, jump up and let's go. jump. 17 after the hour. It's Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago. So, I went underground yesterday, kind of. I did. I'm a little off mic at the beginning of this. We're talking to Dr. Paul. I'm asking this sort of hypothetical situation. Yeah, you'll get the drift. Here he comes here.
Oops. In a hypothetical situation. Let's say I actually didn't have a famous thing that I do, and it's just the Amway franchise that I'm living on right now. But then, hypothetically, we're going to go on TV tonight and make a nationwide television announcement that despite having blown off everything you told me to do, I was okay. How would that go? Would you be mad at me?
You know, I wouldn't, because it happens to doctors all day, every day. It's just part and parcel of medicine. You know, that's at every conference you take, how to handle the non-compliant patient.
Now, what percentage is it? Is it 2 or 3 cranky guys like me, or is
it
a big problem?
It's a big problem. Yeah, I would say probably 20% of the patients you see don't listen to what you say.
Why?
Well, I used to think it was just out of the fact that they couldn't do it, right? I tell somebody, you got to stay off your foot. And they can't. Their balance is off. And they just, no matter how they try, they can't stay off their foot, right? But I don't think that's the case anymore. I think misinformation is a bigger reason.
Well, you know, in the midst of all this, there's an outbreak of these anti-vaccination people.
Yep.
There's no medical evidence that that's a bad idea. We need our shots. Kids need our shots. We all do. So I saw this the other day. There's now it should be hashtag I'm crazy. You know, it should be hashtag I'm endangering my children. Back to misinformation.
Well, so what happens is you get on the internet and you Google whatever you have, and you can always find what you want to see. And what's worse, in today's day and age, these search engines know you. They know you well enough to know what you're trying to see. It knows your tendencies. So if you and I search the same thing, we're going to have different hits come up first. And I'm going to see what I want to see. You're going to see what you want to see. And you're going to believe it. You know, and my dad used to always tell, he's a retired dentist, you know, slash oral surgeon, put a filling in my tooth. My first cavity about 10 years ago now. Put a silver filling in. I said, Dad, what are you doing? Putting mercury in my mouth. Like, this doesn't happen anymore. He goes, you know what? Those white composite ones look great, but they don't last as long. This will last you your lifetime. We never took them out. The only reason people take them out is because they worry about the mercury. And the amount of mercury that leaks out is over your lifetime. Is probably less than what you'd get from eating a can of tuna fish.
That's right. Yeah, I heard that.
So what are we going crazy about?
In those days, you know, we were told that you could receive radio stations through those same filters.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Your dad still with us?
Yeah.
What's he make of all this?
Well, first of all, he's old school, diehard Republican.
Yeah. That's even better.
You know, yeah. And so when it comes to the medical side, he says, well, you know, he's probably getting a lot of bad advice. Oh, well, you know, he makes all kinds of excuses. But at the end of the day, I think he knows, you know, what's happening. But again, it's where you watch your news, right? If I tell him, you know, the guy left possibly against medical advice anywhere else.
Right?
Well, I don't know, because his doctor is a political appointee, not really somebody who is going to practice medicine as if you come to see me. You know, it's harder to treat people that you know well. That's why we don't treat our families, right? And this guy he's an appointee to the White House. And he's become, I'm sure, close with them. And that relationship fades your real medical decision making. And is he really in the best position to give advice, or is he going to cave to what the president wants done?
Well, and that appears to be pretty much what happened. I saw today, just as I was coming in, that I think the same doctor said that he doesn't, that Trump doesn't have any symptoms today, which I guess that's possible.
Which is great. I mean, look, I don't want anybody to get sick. I don't want anybody to have a problem. But when you look at this, this is more of a getting lucky than being good scenario. If I were to tell you to take omeprazole, a simple, you know, antacid proton pump inhibitor for reflux. Yeah, Prilosec. And you use Prilosec with, let's say, you know, grapefruit juice or whatever. You know, there are certain things that interact that you can't take within a few hours of each other. They're two safe things to use independently. You start mixing them together, we have problems. So to take two, not one, two experimental medicines, one of them still in a phase one clinical trial, and think that that was good decision-making to use the president of the United States as our guinea pig. That's just crazy.
Both of these things that he's on, he owns a position in the company that make them. I know that's true with the remdesivir.
Right.
I think he's got a position, Regeneron.
Yeah. And I'm sure he does, and you know, but I'm not sure that that's really what tilted this. I'm sure he said, I want the best things. What are the best things? These are the best things. Give me them both. And everybody says, well, wait a minute. You know, I don't know if it's not tested. I don't care. Give me them both. You know? And, you know, you're fighting with a bully who is, you know, your job is basically hinging on what he wants.
What we're talking on the air, this was today, you and I both know that I have some experience in checking in on a hospital.
Sure.
Yeah. This isn't something that one person decides. There's a protocol. They get together and it's like, yeah, did you know we had a head wound when you signed off on this? This is not a good. And I'm wondering now, you can see that the medical people are like, maybe he should go somewhere else. I mean, I'm interpolating.
Well, and that's the other thing. Like, I was talking to a friend of mine that practices out on the East Coast, not far from the hospital, and I said, you know, is Walter Reed really this great hospital? Yeah. And I started to think about that. It's a military hospital. The VAs aren't known to be the best healthcare centers in this day and age. You know, at a time they probably were, and there are times, you know, and I'm not saying anything about military doctors. You know, I think that they're wonderful and everything. But, right. So I'm like, you know, if I'm being medevaced somewhere or in a helicopter, am I not going to maybe like Beth Israel and, you know, or the Mayo Clinic or, you know, something like that, Northwestern? You have your pick of anywhere you want to go. You're the president. So you're going to get a team of doctors that's going to be run by this appointee that you're probably too close to really have a independent relationship with. And I know the whole thing just seems crazy. And on top of it, why did you bring him out of the White House in the first place when you have a state-of-the-art medical facility at the White House, unless you were really worried?
This is Dr. Paul. You know, well, that was the thing that they shuffled on whether they'd give him oxygen or not, which is like, it looks like, well, it wasn't drugged then. You know, they gave him oxygen. And so, and you know as well as I do, the man is.
Well, they do. You know, so you know, if you're outside, you're in an accident, okay? And you know, a healthy person, they put a pulse ox on your finger. You're labored breathing because you're nervous and everything else. They look, they're like, 93 on, you know, room air. They'll stick a nasal cannula on you and they'll give you 2 liters of oxygen just for the transfer. Because why risk it, right? We don't know what's going on. Stick him on some oxygen until he gets there. We'll assess it. So, I mean, it's not uncommon to see people just routinely get oxygen and transport and things like that. Now,
I think this was in the hospital.
But if that's the case, you know, then what happens is they get assessed, they get worked up. And it's, so, yeah, we gave it to him, but he didn't need it, so we discontinued. What's the big deal of that?
To make it so that we
never didn't give him, you know, all these double negatives. And
he does the superhero thing when he got out of the car and goes to the White House, he rips the mask off. And you could see, if anybody watched him, he had what we call labored breathing. He had just walked up the steps. He was having trouble with it. So.
But, you know, he's a big, heavy guy. And he
outweighs me. He and I are at the same height. He He outweighs me by 122 pounds.
Well, and I didn't see him go up those stairs slow.
No.
You know, so he could have been out of breath from going up the stairs. Yeah. But again, the problem we have is that there's no transparency in what's happening. You know, if I'm out of, like, I could walk up two flights of stairs and be out of breath. I'm going to turn around and be like, man, I'm out of shape. I shouldn't walk up two flights of stairs so fast. This guy's like, what are you talking about? I'm not out of breath. Nothing to see here.
I feel so good. He's on steroids, right?
I mean, yeah. Every time somebody's on steroids, you feel great.
He's ready to jog. So, what was his name? Herman McCain, the guy, the COVID denier, he was telling people not to wear a mask, and after he died, I saw his timeline, and he was, I'm feeling fine to dead in a month.
Well,
that's not necessarily to say that this guy is going to get that.
But you know, not only that, but the timeline of this is kind of crazy, because you don't just turn positive within a day. So there's no way that Hope Hicks is his, you know, N zero, you know. So
28 after the hour, and this is Dr. Paul.
We've ruined Dr. Paul's career.
So there's no way that she was N zero. Right, she was, by the time she was symptomatic, already in incubation. If you go back to even a day before that, the quote-unquote Rose Garden super spreading event, even the day or two before that, people were falling positive.
Yep.
So who knows how long this thing's been circulating.
Today they decided that they would not do any contact tracing prior to, I think, 2 days before. And now we're up, as I walked in, we're up to, I think they have 15 people that are positive in the White House staff.
Now, on the flip side to that, the media keeps going, when was this last negative test?
No.
Well, you could have a negative test and be positive.
No.
So it's kind of irrelevant.
Well, hang on. You can have a negative test and be, because it is the
habit. Let's say you're still in your incubation period, and you're not shedding any viral load right now yet. And you get exposed today, hypothetically, you're exposed today. And I test you tomorrow. You're not shedding any viral load. You might be in an incubation period, and in 3 to 7 days, you might turn positive, right? But right now, you're going to test negative. That doesn't mean you don't have the virus.
Even if
today.
He were communicable, he could test negative.
Theoretically, yes. Now, the thought is that you shouldn't be able to spread this virus until you start shedding viral particles. And that's when the test should pick it up. But that doesn't mean that that's when he picked it up. You know what I mean? And let's say he was negative on, I'm just going to make day one, he's negative after exposure. Day two, he doesn't get tested, but he could have been positive day two. Day three, he still didn't get tested, so he could be positive. Then day four, he gets tested. Now he's positive. I don't know what he was doing on day two or day three. Right? So, you know, there's a reason that when somebody has an exposure, we don't have to run and test them. What we have to do is quarantine them. So if you and I were to get an exposure, you're going to be told by the CDC, you need to quarantine for 14 days. Go home, Gary. Don't move. 14 days, sit in your house. And if you don't show any symptoms after 14 days, you don't even need a test. You can come back out and play with everybody.
Because that's the sensitive time.
And the mistake people would make is they'd say, well, I had an exposure yesterday. They get tested today. The test is negative. They go, I guess I don't have to quarantine.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
Well, Dr. Paul is here. Thanks for... So just a final medical thing.
Sure.
Where are you on drinking bleach?
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say don't.
No?
Yeah, I think it would be bad.
You just bought Clorox today.
The wipes, maybe, for your forehead. And thank you.
Dr. Paul, we'll come back and talk about Enneagrams next.
First thing that you'll notice is some separation from each other. Yes, it's a lie we've been believing since time immemorial. There was an apple, there was a snake, there was division. There My mission is to keep the light in your eyes ablaze. Second thing you'll notice is that often we think that there's not enough. It might feel dark, it might feel lonely, and you wonder why you're here. You may be overcome with darkness and a sense of hopelessness, but it won't matter if you keep the cord connected to the oneness. To my girl, all your innocence and fire.
Alanis Morissette, a song I understand was written for her children, which is an excellent segue. We have a mom on the phone here, our favorite type of guest. Her name is Emily, and she is from EnneagramWithEmily.com. Notice how slowly I'm speaking here. Emily, I hate to screw up the introduction. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, thanks.
You do have two children. Forgive me, 7 and 10, right? Something like that?
Yes, yeah, and actually, they are even now, 8 and 11, and we are down here doing virtual schooling, so it has been a challenge.
How is that? You know, how's that going? I told you off the air, my sister is a teacher. We'll get into that. She's a 9. I'm not sure what that is, but I think you're a 9. Anyway, the schooling, how is that going?
It's going great for one child, and one child really does not like it whatsoever,
yeah.
And as an Enneagram 9, which we'll talk about, I like my piece. And so it has really messed with my peace. So I've been doing, it's given me a lot of opportunity for growth in the last 6 weeks.
Oh my goodness. All right. It's Emily, E-M-I-L-Y. And it is Emily, I'm going to spell Enneagram, E-N-N-E-A-G-R-A-M. And the website is EnneagramWithEmily.com. If you don't do it if you're driving, of course, but if you're somewhere, the room is not moving, you might want to pull out your device and punch it up here, and we'll play along. I just watched a video of Emily introducing herself a little bit and talking about how she came to do all this. Well, listen, let me take like about 30 seconds. All I know about the Enneagram, I was taught by a fellow who's supposed to teach me to meditate, and we never pulled that off. But he told me that I'm a 7. I, based on what I know about that, I believe that, and that's about it. My producer, I think, thinks that she's a 4, and, my sister is a 9, and I'll stop there. So an Enneagram, that's a Sufi belief system. Is that right? Or did I get that wrong at all?
Well, it's an ancient system with, traces in many different ways. And the idea is that, well, and actually the root word is, it's a Greek word of enia is nine, and gram or gramos is the written symbol. So it's really just a nine-pointed symbol.
Okay.
That sometimes the word throws people. But yes, it's an ancient tool, and then it has come back into popularity, kind of since the 70s, which is just very interesting.
It's because all of us hippies are now in a position of authority.
Well, how I see it is that the cosmos or higher power or God or whoever you like kind of knew that we needed, our world would be very broken at this point, yeah. And we needed a tool to help understand how other people see things, yeah. Which is why this is my passion for teaching it, is because I truly see this as one tool to help heal this very broken and divided world.
Well, we need all the tools that we can. So it's 9 points on a star. And it's funny, Emily, I was talking to, when I knew nothing about this, and I talked to somebody who said, oh, I know the Enneagram. Oh, yeah. Well, my wife, my ex-wife, she married a 4. Of course, that didn't work out. So then she got divorced. She married a 5. Well, all these numbers are flying around. So people that are into Enneagram, they are into it. It's complicated. People want to know what number they are. And I looked up a bunch of stuff online. I didn't find any of I'm not talking about your website. I didn't find any of the tests very helpful. How do you, what's the word, diagnose? That's a bad word this week.
I guess just figure out your type. That's a great question. And I mean, the interesting thing is you have to look at, they often think, or they do think that your Enneagram type is almost, you're kind of born with it, and then it kind of develops and could be slightly changed or molded as you're growing up. But they really think it's actually developed by the time you're the age of 5.
Really?
So
yeah.
I always tell people if they're getting frustrated not being able to figure out their type, I always say, well, take your age, subtract 5, and this has been your mode of operation to get through life for that many years. And so it does require some patience and curiosity to just keep noticing things. Personally, I would recommend, finding an Enneagram teacher, and or there are also lots of great podcasts out there, lots of great books. Although there are lots of tests, and the hesitation with tests is that the Enneagram is based on your motivation.
Hmm.
And so there are some good tests out there, but the tests can really only judge your behavior, because most of us have never taken the time to think about our motivations. And so that's why it's really an unlayering or uncovering with curiosity to start noticing your motivation. That's how you figure out your type.
This is Emily from Enneagram with Emily, Enneagram. When I spell stuff on the radio, we know we're going down in flames. Enneagramwithemily.com. Listen, with any luck, we'll be fast friends and be able to deal this out. This is a little bit complex for a morning radio show. However, I know we can do it. So you revealed that you're a 9, and I revealed that my sister, I think, is a 9. She's a teacher in Texas. What are 9s, and let's start there. What's that about?
Yeah, sure. So basically, as we said, they're 9 different types, and each type has this motivation of what they're looking for, which also means what they're trying to avoid as well. Or then there's also something they're trying to avoid. So, for instance, 9s are always trying to keep the peace and be mediators and keep peace within their lives, because they have this fear of conflict. And really what it is being disconnected from others.
Mm-hmm.
That's in a nutshell. You want me to go on and go around the circle?
Well, sure, we could. I just want to come back and the thing that grabbed me, and again, what I know about the Enneagram and what you know about it are not even going to be close. I got the impression, the thing that spoke to me, and I am into astrology. I hate to admit that, as an old hippie, and it works for me, and I've gone into a long time. But the astrologers that tend to not be so accurate, they'll say, oh, we looked at Johnny's chart, and he is, wow, he's going to be a wonderful kid when he grows up. The Enneagram is more like, I'm a 7 theoretically. I'm a glutton, right? Is that not true? That part of the Enneagram, what you said, is where you don't want to go or what you're trying to resist. What about that?
Yes, so true. And that's why the Enneagram is so powerful, is because Yes, when you first learn it, you kind of see the bad stuff, but that does not mean that you're stuck there. Really, it just highlights what you might want to work on most to lead towards growth. So, yes, you do. You have this, as a 7, Enneagram 7, you have this goal of being satisfied and content, but it's also kind of never enough, so you keep wanting to be more and more satisfied and more content.
Oh, we're out of time. Oh, I'm so sorry. Go ahead, yeah.
And so when you hear that, you know, the idea is not to just say, oh, sorry, I can't be around any pain. I don't like to be deprived. This is just me. Instead, this is like having an express lane ticket to say, oh, this is kind of exactly what I need to work on to become more whole. Because, all right, now we're going to get a little deeper here. I'm sure you can look back in your life and notice sometimes that you so were afraid of being trapped in any pain that you pushed into the gluttony, or you got into the gluttony stuff, and then it caused some stress in your relationship.
Sure. Yesterday. No. I'm fooling around with you because when I saw this, as I said, the fellow that turned me on was a man whose name is Joe Zerantanello. He lives in a hollow in Kentucky. And he, for some reason, knew that I was a 7. 7s are storytellers, I think, Emily. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really question him. He just seemed to have it knocked, and everything I've read about 7 since then seemed to be accurate. But and let's go around, if you care to, go around the in any numerical way that's going to work for you.
Sure. We'll start with 1 just to make it.
All right, with ones.
Okay. All right. So Enneagram 1, and there are multiple words that you could use as the title for these. So if somebody is hearing this and does not like that word, these are just man-given words to this tool. Right. The idea is what you're looking for is the overarching theme of this type. So Enneagram 1s are sometimes known as the perfectionists, the reformers, the improvers. So they have a motivation to live their life the right way, which includes improving themselves and improving the world around them. And so they're constantly looking at ways that things could be better because they have this fear of being morally incorrect or corrupt or breaking principles or promises.
Am I inaccurate in thinking that these are priests, psychoanalysts, people like that? Is that the right area? What do you think? Go ahead.
I'll answer that. That could be, but we all do. There are many behaviors that a large group of people do, but it's all for different motivations.
Okay.
So some people might become priests because they think it's the right thing to do. Some people, like as a 9, might do it because they find the peace of God, you know, in mass or something.
Okay. I'm just going to say, so occupation and Enneagram, not necessarily connected there.
Exactly. Okay. Yes, they're correct. It's not always connected.
Okay.
Often there are, you know, some lawyers that want to be ones because they want to do things the right way.
Yeah.
But then every type could be a lawyer as well. Enneagram 2s are known as the giver, the helper, the nurturer. They have this need to be loved and valued and to express their positive feelings towards others because they have this fear of being unwanted or unneeded and having and not receiving love. And so they are very warm, caring people. That, remember, all types can be warm and caring, but 2s are especially warm and caring.
At the risk of being cliché-ish, maternal?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yes, very maternal.
Okay.
And there are certain Enneagram types that these are not gender-based whatsoever, but there are, like I have a friend who is a male Enneagram 2, and he does not like it because he's like, that sounds kind of maternal, girly. However, he's a doctor, and I've told him, I'm like, you are such a great doctor because you care for your patients so much, and you remember their stories, and you take time to really listen to what they're sharing. So his Enneagram type makes him a great doctor, but yes, sometimes Enneagram 2s can sound a little more female.
Is there not an I read somewhere, and please just stop me if you've heard any of this, that nobody on the Enneagram, it's not a wheel, but the only people that acknowledge who they really are eights. I read that somewhere. Or other people, is that true? You laugh. That must be true. Sinatra was an eight, I think. The man who drove a golf cart through the window of a casino. But your friend the doctor was resistant to that. He was like, oh, I don't know about that. Talk more about that. Do people argue with you when you say you're a four or five or an eight or not?
That's a great point. It depends. Sometimes they do often say that when you hear a more in-depth description and it really bothers you, often you might want to sit with it because that there's a good chance that could be your type.
Yeah.
And the reason it's your type is because it's hitting a nerve. When you hear about a type that's not you, you don't care about it because you're like, well, that's whatever. Like the need to be loved or the need to be needed, whatever. But if you are a two, like as soon as you know you mentioned gluttony, you're like, oh gosh, yes, I've heard that. And so it depends on how self-aware the eight is. So I know some eights that are like, yep, that's me, the challenger, the leader, the boss. Yep, I'm in charge. And then there are some that are slightly more self-aware that say, oh, I know I am that way. But you know what? There's another side to me. Like, I'm the challenger and the boss because I'm trying to stand up for the underdog. And I hate, so it depends on how self-aware they are. But yes, eights don't cringe quite as much usually
now,
when they hear their type.
Trump is an eight, is he not?
That is true. And that's a great time because I'm sure already half the people more than half are groaning. This relates back to what you were saying about somebody said, oh, my ex-wife was a four or five.
Yeah.
The goal of the Enneagram is to become more healthy in your type, which means more aware of how your motivations are influencing you so that at certain times you can pause and say, oh, wow. So let's use you as an example. Oh, wow. I see my daughter really struggling with something and having a lot of emotional pain about something. And so I want to say, let's go putt-putt golfing and get ice cream. But instead, as Gary, I realize that is my motivation is to avoid pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead, I'm going to take some deep breaths and get centered. This is where meditation does come in handy.
Right.
And I'm going to sit with her in her pain. And I'm not going to reframe it. And I'm not going to just try to look at the bright side. I'm going to acknowledge that this is just painful, even though it kind of goes against my natural inclination.
I'm actually getting this. I'm not sure what that means. 10 before the hour, if you just join us, this is Emily from EnneagramWithEmily.com, which is on our website. If you look at bleat.network, her website is, we have the link up there. I'm making you jump around here. Our hardworking producer thinks that she's a four. What about that? What would a four be?
Well, I'm gonna stick on three and then go to four.
I'm sorry, I hit the wrong. My pencil broke.
And I don't want to leave the three. Though.
I know, I blew it. I'm sorry. You're right. You're quite right. Go ahead. Hit the three.
Have a need to be. They're called the achievers, the performers. They have a need to be successful, productive, and avoid failure because they have this fear of becoming insignificant in the eyes of others if they are not achieving. And something to notice is that America is a very Enneagram 3 country. So you don't have to be an Enneagram 3 because almost our culture just keeps us, this is swirling around us all the time of do better, do more, go faster, be more productive. So it's just something interesting to notice within our country. So up to Enneagram 4s, they are called the romantics, the artist, really the individualist. So they have a need to experience their feelings and to be understood. They really want to search for the meaning of life and the depth of life, and they want to avoid being ordinary because they have this fear of being unoriginal or ordinary and lacking a definitive self-identity.
Hmm.
Do you see that at all?
In Sparks, absolutely. She's the most spiritual producer I've ever met. Unbelievable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, you hit it there.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, keep going here. I'm making a list and checking it twice. So,
so Enneagram 5s are known as the observers, the thinkers, the investigators, and they want to know and understand everything. So they are often the types we joke about, like, if you're at a trivia night, either they're going to know all the answers, or they're the type that if they don't know the answer, they're not satisfied with just hearing the answer. They will then go to their phone and research because they want to understand why they got that wrong, and because they're trying to always gather up more information so that they can be self-sufficient and avoid looking foolish because they have a fear of being incompetent and useless and not being able to take on new challenges.
My mind is racing. I know a couple of fives for sure. And these people, they talk in dissertation to some extent. They want to make sure that they're... Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's what's fascinating about fives. They can be quiet so if they don't know something, they're not going to say a word.
Mm-hmm.
And if they know something and you get them on their topic, they could give a dissertation on it.
Right.
It's interesting.
I am nodding. Can you see me? Can you hear it? I need a nod. I need a nod more audibly. It's 7 before the hour. This is Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago on Bleat.network. It's Gary Lee Wright and Emily, who is the proprietor of the Enneagram with Emily. I don't know why I keep booting this. Enneagramwithemily.com. It's Enneagram with Emily.com. And it's on our website. Go to Bleat.network and we'll get you fixed up here. So I'm writing with three hands here. I should have brought more pencils in, Emily. You have so much information.
You can book a session with me, and I'll teach you even more.
I am ready. So the number six, I must tell you that when I went through this, all the points at some point, I knew every. I thought that I knew every. You know that I knew every point personally. I had an example. I don't think I knew a six. So what? Tell me about a six.
So chances are you do know sixes. But here's the interesting thing. So what sixes are looking for, well, they're called the loyal skeptic, which is a great name for them because they are very loyal, but they are also skeptical of things. They're often questioners because what they are looking for is security and safety. So they have a lot of their minds are constantly scanning for maybe some danger or worst-case scenarios because they're trying to be prepared for when that happens. Now, here's the interesting thing. They might not tell you about that. So they're often, when a six hears this, they're like, well, doesn't everybody think like that? Doesn't everybody just kind of think, oh, those hedges should be trimmed because there's not good visibility pulling out onto that road? Or just a lot of little things that are trying to keep them safe and alert and prepared for anything that could be dangerous. But they have learned over time, some sixes have learned over time, that when they say that, people start to fuss at them and say, God, why are you such a party pooper? Why are you always bringing us down? No offense to you, Gary, I'm sure as a seven, you've probably felt that. And so they've learned to just not say it around you.
I know.
Their brain is thinking it.
Well, that's why I eat so much. I'm dealing with the... And the gluttony, the rejection. Oh, these are jokes. Emily, I'm looking at the clock. This hour is flown here. Let me ask you, can you come back?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Please come back again. Come back again soon, and we'll try to figure out how to, I don't know, I almost think that if there's a way that we could, I don't know. For example, if you're listening to me and you have a thought, you could drop us a question. It's radioanything@gmail.com. Or we have the toll-free 844-220-3300. Cut me a voicemail. And we'll play for Emily next time she's on. Maybe she can respond to that. But I'm going to urge you.
That's great.
I'm going to urge you to go to her website. And I have no reason to recommend this woman that I just met 5 minutes ago. But everything that she's told me about Enneagrams in the last half hour has echoed. In fact, there's an echo in the room right now. There you go. So it's Emily... Emily, and it is Enneagram, Enneagram with Emily.com. And thank you.
And thank you. And also, if people aren't into websites, they can also find me on Instagram and Facebook almost every day posting those are the same handles of Enneagram with Emily at Instagram and Facebook.
Good
and
deal.
That's a great way to learn more.
Good deal. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day. Have a 9-day. Don't have an 8-day.
Sounds good.
This Widecast was produced in Chicago by Natasha Rodriguez. Have the best day you can.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.